In February, the Shea Stevens Outlaw Biker books 1 through 3 became available as a collection, and right now is a great time to buy it, because what comes out June 14th, Dharma?
That would be Book 4, Road Rash.
Book 4, Road Rash, and I love the name. We're going to talk about Road Rash and lots of other stuff right after this.
It's time to put on your sleuthing cap, feel nail-biting dread, and face heart-racing fear. This is Queer Writers of Crime, where you'll get book recommendations and hear interviews with LGBTQ authors of mystery, suspense, and thriller novels. Here's your host, Brad Shreve.
Hi, I'm Brad. Dharma Kelleher is one of the only openly transgender authors in the crime fiction genre, and I'm happy to call her a friend. You may know her from her gritty crime thrillers about queer women who kick ass, including the Jinx Blue Bounty Hunter series and the Shea Stevens Outlaw Biker series. And Dharma, I was thinking this was your second time on the show, but it's actually your third, because back 2 years ago, you were part of a roundtable discussion we had with Ari Bradshaw, Greg Heron, and John Copenhaver. We were talking.
That's true. Yeah, I do. Yeah.
We were talking about this.
I'm a three-timer.
Yeah. So we were talking about the state of the queer crime industry today, and maybe we should have another one. I don't know if it's changed much in 2 years or not.
I don't know.
I'll have to give it some thought. So let's talk about Shay. The last interview we did, or one of the previous ones, we did talk about the difference between Shea Stevens and your other series, Jinx Blue. We may go there if we have time. Otherwise, people go back and listen to the original. I want to stick with Shea Stevens, since that is the next book, Road Rash.
Road Rash, Road Rash.
Before we talk about Road Rash, kind of give a background of the history, not going into too much detail, but Shea's life through books 1 through 3 and who Shea is.
She's a motorcycle builder. She is an ex-con. When she was younger, when she was a teen, she grew up around an outlaw biker family. If you've seen Sons of Anarchy, imagine being a teenage girl growing up in that environment with your dad as the president of this racist outlaw biker club, you know? I mean, and yet, because she grew up in this environment initially, she just thought the world revolved around her dad. She was like, he's like this amazing guy. And her world came crumbling down around her when her mother was killed and all of her delusions were shattered. And she ended up out as a runaway teenager on her own and doing what she had learned from her father in order to survive, which in this case was stealing cars. Ended up getting busted, spent a few years in prison, and then eventually became when she got out, she became a custom motorcycle builder. And so that's where Iron Goddess picks up. Iron Goddess is actually the name of the motorcycle shop where she works. And it takes place in a fictional Arizona county, north of Phoenix.
So in Road Rash, Shay has a motorcycle accident, minor, not too severe. despite being a experienced biker, and I will say, I love motorcycles, but every biker friend I have, and I used to have one, I did mostly dirt riding. Every friend I have that has a motorcycle has been in an accident of one kind or another.
Myself included.
Yeah. So I hear them say, well, I'm a safe rider. Well, you may be safe, but cars don't see you. I'm sorry. They don't see motorcycles.
I live in a retirement community where turning left from the right-hand lane is considered going with the flow of traffic. So, I mean, they don't see motorcycles, and they do crazy, stupid stuff. And yet, despite that, the one real accident that I was in where I was seriously injured was entirely my fault. The motorcycle I had a manual clutch, and it hadn't warmed up, and I bobbled the clutch and it fell over on my ankle. And so I shattered it in 7 places, sidelined me for several months. But I turned that pain, and it was a lot of physical pain, into creativity. And so that was partially the inspiration behind Road Rash.
Well, you got more than a road rash out of that deal.
Oh, yeah.
One of my very closest friends, and we were roommates at the time, was in a motorcycle accident. He hit a train rail. you know, you get stuck in that groove and it.
Oh, yeah.
So it threw him off the road and he hit a billboard and or the post of a billboard. And so he calls me from the hospital. He was okay. And he said, could you go get my bike for me? I said, okay. So I don't remember how I got there, but I got his bike and I rode it home. No problems. As soon as I pulled into park it, parts fell off. I said, thank God I made it home before that happened.
The Iron Goddess was watching out for you that day.
Exactly. So other than getting into a bit of a spill, what else happens with Shay in Road Rash?
She is asked by some dear friends of hers to rescue their daughter from a cult. And this was kind of inspired. I had seen a newspaper, or no, not well, a news article about the Nixium cult and about the leaders of this cult that I had never heard of prior to this point, being on trial and all some of the horrible things that they had done. And I just thought, that might be an interesting subject to explore for a novel. And so the more I dug into it, the more I found it was really, really fascinating because, you know, you think, okay, rescuing someone from a cult, you just go in, grab them, and then deprogram them. You know, it's like, no problem. But it doesn't work that way. First of all, the deprogramming doesn't really work. The brainwashing that they've been through with the cult is really deeply set, and it takes time to wheedle through that. And so 48 hours with some so-called deprogrammer doesn't really work. Second of all, it's illegal. If the person in question is a legal adult, taking them away by force against their will is considered kidnapping, and there's considerable case law since the 1980s on that. So I'm like, wow, so how would Shay handle this? And so that kind of became an exploration because, you know, she's always been about brute force, you know, go in guns blazing, defeat the bad guys. Like, she can't do that here. So it forces her to be a fish out of water situation. So it was a lot of fun to write that.
What about Shay's prison background?
Well, you know, she served several years for Grand Theft Auto. So it's something that haunts her. And she over the period of the books, she has run-ins with the police and ends up having to make deals that she would otherwise not want to make.
And is that part of her background regarding solving crimes?
Yeah, her approach, having grown up in, you know, around an outlaw biker club, she has a strong distrust of law enforcement. And I mean, I don't have a criminal background, just in case people are wondering. So a lot of that is a lot of research. Not to say that I haven't committed my own share of crimes, survival crime. But when push comes to shove, she tends to go the outlaw route. She's, you know, her instincts are to go in guns blazing and to use, to rely on her own skills rather than to rely on the local law enforcement.
And one thing I suggest readers do, because it's kind of fun, on Dharma's website, she interviews Shay Stevens.
Yes.
Which I thought was very clever, and I really liked it. It was a good conversation the two of you had.
Shay's an interesting person. I mean, certainly we have our similarities because I created her, but she's a lot tougher, a lot darker, and she's just a lot grittier than I am. There's a little bit of wish fulfillment there. I draw a lot of it, especially these days. I look at and I see how the system, big S, the system, favors the privileged. Mm-hmm. It favors white cishet men. And even those that claim to enforce the law is written primarily by white cishet men. And we've seen a lot of new laws in the past few months that target trans people especially, and target women. And this only reinforces the fact that the system is designed to protect the white cishet patriarchy. And I know that sounds like paranoid conspiracy theory, but the fact is that you just have to look at the laws that are being passed. They're Election districting laws are being passed to disenfranchise voters of color. New voting rights laws are being passed to disenfranchise people of color, to disenfranchise the disabled, to disenfranchise anyone that dares to speak out against the white patriarchy. Laws against trans kids and trans families. And I mean, it's not paranoia, it's simply a recognition of what is simply going on. And so when I write the stories that I write, whether it's Shay or with Jinx Blue or even my new series, Avery Byrne, I write it from that perspective because I write about justice, and justice isn't about the legal system. Too often, the legal system favors the system, the man.
And I agree with you. I don't think it's, well, you said you don't mean to, you said you didn't want to sound like it was a conspiracy theory. And mm-hmm. I don't think it is. You're 100% right. It's all about white males. They're losing their place and they're desperately, desperately trying to hold on to it. And I just think it's men, mostly men, with the same fear that are just reacting together. There probably is amongst, in fact, I'm sure there is amongst the upper echelon is, and I hate to say that our ex-president is smart enough to be part of the upper echelon, but he certainly was used by those that I do think could be considered part of a conspiracy going on. It is well mapped out. But I think for the general public, it's a gut reaction out of fear. And
absolutely.
I say all the time, it's Obama's fault. And my mother-in-law, who is black, she's like, what? I said, it's his fault. He was black. We had a black president. And oh my God, they couldn't believe it. What is happening to this country? So it's only his fault in the fact that they didn't want him there.
Right.
And that really scared them. That and marriage equality and everything else, they just see their world running through their fingers.
Their control diminishing.
Yes.
And so they have decided that the rules no longer apply to them. And so they are willing to cheat, fight, do whatever, by any means necessary. It's very, very Machiavellian. Truth no longer matters. Integrity no longer matters. Hurting people and maintaining power for the patriarchy is all that matters by any means necessary. And I hate that that is the truth, but it is. And the problem isn't, I see the media so often trying to do a both sides kind of argument. Well, this is what this side is saying, and this is what that side is saying. Only one side is telling the truth and one side is obviously lying. It's not, they're not even pretending to hide it. Mm-hmm. It's obvious lies. And so too often I still see this both sides kind of thing. And at one point you just have to say, this is no longer the truth. And you have to decide what matters to you. Does integrity matter to you? Compassion, kindness, or does power all that matters? As you mentioned, it's not just the men. There are women who are empowered by the patriarchy. I see this with Caitlyn Jenner. Mm-hmm. She is empowered by the patriarchy. She has turned her back on the transgender community in order to maintain her own power, to cling on to that white male privilege. And I say that not to misgender her, but to simply recognize the dynamic of what she's doing. She's a trans woman, but she's a trans woman working for the white male patriarchy. And it's obvious. You just have to look at it. And to say otherwise is to simply close your eyes to the truth.
And with Caitlyn, it's been, I don't know how long, it's been quite some time since she came out.
Right.
And yet, despite that length of time, when she says something and does something, I'm still a deer in the headlights, and I'm like, what the fuck?
Despite the community's desperate attempts to try to educate her. I mean, because I remember when she had her show, and we were already, many of us in the community were panning the show, and there were some that were had ties to her. They're saying, well, we're trying to educate her. Well, how did that turn out? Didn't turn out well. Mm-hmm. Because she doesn't want to listen.
Yeah.
She doesn't care. And truth, integrity, accountability, none of that matters to her because she just prefers just to hold on to her celebrity status. And kindness, compassion doesn't play a part in it anymore. She's part of the whole Kardashian empire, which the only reason they're famous is because they're famous. It started with a sex tape. I mean, mm-hmm. What have they contributed to the world? Nada.
And they aren't even that good.
It's just like, it's just media for media's sake, celebrity for, and I don't hate them, but it breaks my heart to see the harm that the very real harm that they're doing. Because I see families, Amber Brigel, forgive me, Amber, for screwing up your name. She is the mother of a trans kid in Texas and fighting to keep custody of her own child just for allowing her child to transition, for loving her child enough to respect his identity. And it breaks my heart that so many people are willing to toe the line for in the name of cruelty and power.
Yeah, over the past few years, I think I have at least three friends who had a child that came out as trans, and mm-hmm. it was handled so beautifully.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it makes it easy for me to forget we got a long way to go.
We still do.
Yeah.
I mean, I came out 30 years ago. 30 years ago.
You were.
And for a while up until like the past couple of years, I was thinking, wow, things have gotten so much better. And then they set their sights on us and now it's war. And honestly, it's what drives me as an author. I don't care about the money. I don't make a profit. I spend more on advertising and marketing and software and everything else. I'm not in black, but I don't care because I'm connecting with people and giving people hope, just a little bit of hope. I'm showing trans people that they can be heroes, at least on the page. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of real trans heroes that are worthy of applause. I mean, I give absolute kudos to Elliot Page for coming out and risking his career as. And I hope I'm using the right pronouns. Elliot, if I'm using the wrong pronouns, if it's they there, please forgive me. I'm doing my best. Sometimes it's hard to remember different people's pronouns. Sometimes I can't remember my own name.
And I want to speak to that because
yeah.
I got chewed out for referring to an admin on in a Facebook group who had mm-hmm. what is considered a traditional female name. And mm-hmm. in a comment to thank her for allowing mm-hmm. me to do something in the group I referred to mm-hmm. as her. And I was viciously attacked by mm-hmm. not her, by group members.
Right.
To that she goes by, or they go by they, them.
Right.
And I'm like, I respect that. Now that I know that, I understand, but mm-hmm. how, you know, it's very hard to keep track nowadays.
Sometimes it's hard to keep track of what people's pronouns are, and we do the best we can. And sometimes some people can be a little bit overvigilant. Their heart's in the right places, but sometimes we have to be polite in how we correct people.
It's yes.
Like, hey, I know you're trying to be respectful. Because of that, I recognize that their pronouns are they, them, or his pronouns are he, him. And, you know, I do the best I can. You know, like I said, I came out as trans 30 years ago, there were non-binary people. I did not know that. It wasn't discussed even in the trans community, at least the one that I was a part of. And when I started learning and meeting non-binary people, it took me, an old timer, a little time to realize, okay, I can buy that. I can make room in my worldview for people that are different than me, that whose experiences are different than mine, whose pronouns are different from mine. And yet I still, my old brain is still very set in binary, and I have to correct myself sometimes to not use the wrong pronouns when I know them.
You can get more information about episodes, plus scoops on book releases and promotions by LGBTQ crime authors each and every week. Simply head over to queerwritersofcrime.com and sign up for the newsletter. Brad made it easy and put the link right here in the show notes. Need a little nudge? Click it now and you'll also get a free ebook by one of a select group of outstanding authors. That makes not subscribing just plain silly. It's all yours at queerwritersofcrime.com.
And it's not a microaggression. It is actually just humanity. And when we know better, we will do better and we'll try better. And we will get it wrong sometimes. We do the best we can. We have to give people a little bit of latitude. It's important to respect people's pronouns and identities, but also understand we're all human too, and we're doing the best they can. So, I mean, it's one thing dealing with trolls that are intentionally trying to hurt us and cause harm and disrespect us. A different thing when allies screw up, and how we approach that can make a big difference.
Yeah, and when I send out a information sheet asking for mm-hmm. guests to give me mm-hmm. their biography, little bio, and mm-hmm. some background, as you know, I have what pronouns do you use?
Right.
Because mm-hmm. I respect that. And I'm glad that people that aren't comfortable with mm-hmm. he or her or whatever have an option today. But mm-hmm. this is new. It was a very short time ago where that would never even have dawned on me. To right. put that on a questionnaire. So again, it's getting better, but we're going to have to take a little time.
Better.
We're going to have to take a little time to get adjusted to it. And so I'm glad you said so.
Please be patient with us old timers, please.
Exactly.
We respect you. We honor you. We respect who you are and your identity, that these are your pronouns. They're not your chosen pronouns. They are your pronouns. But sometimes those of us.
Us old folk.
Or older. Our old folk, we forget, and it's sometimes it's hard to keep track of whose pronouns are what. And it's a new paradigm that we're working through. And so.
Well, to quote from the opening theme song from All in the Family, back uh-huh. in my day, girls were girls and men were men. Thank God that's changed. Anyway.
Yes.
Back to the white male, an older white male, and I don't have power, and I certainly don't have money, but I am continually reminded of my privilege.
Yes.
As you know, my husband is a black man, and mm-hmm. my family is scattered all over the country. He has a very mm-hmm. large family here, so I see them much more than mm-hmm. my own family, and I've been mm-hmm. lovingly embraced by them all, but I know I'll never really understand. For example, as I mentioned, I recently moved to a new town, and the other mm-hmm. day, I'm not excusing myself, I was speeding through a school zone because mm-hmm. it's quite honestly an ugly building, and I forget that it's even a school, but that's it. That's beside the point. I got pulled over for speeding in a school zone.
Uh-oh.
And the officer came up to the window, was mm-hmm. very friendly. Mm-hmm. You know, he asked for my ID and the registration, and he asked for proof mm-hmm. of insurance. And he mm-hmm. went back to his car because I gave him my ID and registration. And he went back to his car, and I was tearing the car apart. And mm-hmm. he came back to the door and laughed, and he said, "I see you scrambling trying to find the insurance information, and mm-hmm. yeah. I just want to let you know it's paperclip to what you gave me." And it was okay. a joke. And he said, mm-hmm. I'm letting you off with a warning. Mm-hmm. I do not believe for a second that would have been the same right. experience for my husband.
Oh, no.
I know when he is driving to work, I worry mm-hmm. where I don't think twice about it.
Right. Yeah. Privilege is a complex thing because privilege is very intersectional. I certainly have privilege as a white person. I have privilege as a college-educated person. I have privilege in having a house that I own. At the same time, I am a woman. I am a lesbian. I am a transgender woman. It's very intersectional. And the thing about privilege is it's not simply that someone is treated better or worse. The thing is that with privilege comes a blindness. We're simply not aware. We have difficulty conceiving how someone with less privilege than us in various ways experiences the world differently until we're there to witness it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of one of the faults of our human brains that we tend to normalize our privilege. And that's, you know, especially if like, well, I've had a hard life too. Yes, but it hasn't been because of a lack of privilege. When I came out 30 years ago, I lost everything. I lost my job, my family, my friends, my church, my home. I lost everything. Absolutely everything. I was homeless for a while. And that really teaches you when all of that is stripped away, you then become aware of what you had and now you don't. It made me more empathetic to other people who lack the privilege that I do have as a person of color, or the privilege that I have as a white person, as a college-educated person, as a relatively able-bodied person. And so it has made me a better person being aware of that and to becoming an ally for others who are less fortunate than I am.
Yeah, and not to belabor the subject because there's other things I want to talk about. I was talking to my mother-in-law last week, and I said, the closest I can come to understanding the situation is, my former job, I traveled a lot. And very frequently, I flew into a city the night before or the morning of a meeting, and then quickly turned around and jumped back on the plane. I loved it when I had time to run into the restroom and change into comfortable clothes, take off my suit and get into comfortable clothes. A lot of times I didn't have that time. I had to rush to the plane. And I can tell you, the way I was treated on the plane when I was wearing my suit was dramatically, dramatically different than the way I guess I would almost say mistreated when I wore street clothes. And the thing is, I don't think those flight attendants even realized that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certain of that.
Yeah. The blindness of privilege, you don't realize it until you experience a lack of it.
Yeah.
And so, bottom line, just be kind to people.
That's a good rule. And I can tell you, almost every major religion in the world, don't necessarily follow it, that's for sure, mm-hmm. has their version of the golden rule.
Yeah.
It's if you read their text, whatever that may be, mm-hmm. it's always in there.
Right.
And it's a very simple rule. So kind of along the same lines, mm-hmm. let's talk about representation in literature and media in general for transgender individuals. You know, the very earliest I recall, and actually I will say because it was offensive to me when I look back now, is back on the TV show Soap, which I absolutely loved.
Oh, yes.
I loved Soap.
Billy Crystal's character.
Yes, Billy Crystal's character,
Jody.
Was gay, and it was a big deal. He was probably the first major character openly mm-hmm. gay on a TV show.
Right.
And it was mm-hmm. funny. But there were mm-hmm. several episodes where he put on a dress and was admiring how he looked. But mm-hmm. it was it was a presented as a gay man who liked to dress up, and this is what mm-hmm. gay men do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not transgender. Mm-hmm. So I've worn a dress in a couple of shows, but that's all I've been really interested in. It was funny.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you. I actually, until I made some transgender friends, I resented not just transgender people, but pride parades, because I would look and I'm like, that is not me. And that's what people are mm-hmm. seeing. And that is not me.
Oh, yeah. The flamboyant, gay, skinny man in the Speedo.
Yes. And I'm like, that's what people see. And in right. fact, when I came out, my ex-wife's family, they didn't believe it. They said, he's just mm. telling you that so you can get a divorce. Well, first of all, that would be a really odd thing to do. But it's amazing because I didn't fit that stereotype.
Right.
So anyway, back to my question. Do you think it's gotten any better?
Representation? Absolutely. Well, I mean, in terms of literature, there is certainly more trans representation. Unfortunately, still so many of us have to go the indie route if we want to be published.
Yeah.
Robin Geigel, who is a friend and a new author, a relatively new, she just came out with her second book, Survivor's Guilt, and she writes legal thrillers. So if you like John Grisham's stuff, you want to check out Robin Geigel's books, By Way of Sorrow and Survivor's Guilt. She's a lawyer herself, and so she knows the law, but she also knows how to write a gripping legal thriller. So she was published, I think it was by Kensington. Mm-hmm. Forgive me, Robin, if I'm getting that wrong. I think it was Kensington Books.
I think you're
which
right.
Which is, yeah, they're not one of the big five or four or whatever it is in these days, but they are a major major press.
They're big.
And so kudos to them for taking a chance on her. And so I hope she's doing really well with that. I mentioned that the photograph of my books in the Scottish bookstore,
mm-hmm.
her books were right next to it. So
that's awesome.
Yes. So she's a great person and she's a great writer. So, but right now there's only three of us in the crime fiction community that are openly trans. And all three of us are older, white, trans women. So, and now in romance, there's a little bit more diversity in science fiction and speculative fiction and everything. There are certainly a little bit more representation, more diverse representation, some non-binary authors, trans guys, and I think some authors, trans authors of color, I hope. But again, so many of us have to go the indie route because of that. So, because at the end of the day, traditional publishers are a business. And they would rather choose a safe bet, like someone, like a celebrity, to put their marketing money behind than take a chance on a new voice, particularly from a very marginalized community. So it's gotten a little bit better, but we still have a long ways to go. In terms of television and movies, representation has improved dramatically. We mentioned Elliot Page earlier, Laverne Cox, Alexander Billings. More trans authors are getting trans roles, and even trans actors trans actors getting trans roles, and even trans actors getting cisgender roles, which is amazing. It's like, wow, that's fantastic. So, you know, we're able to push a little bit beyond the pigeonholing, the token character, and the roles that they're getting. At least from my perspective as a non-actor, not inside the industry, is at least the roles are a little bit less pigeonholed, less stereotype, less the sex worker, comic relief, murder victim kind of thing.
And I do want to say regarding Robin, I would never pick up a legal thriller, and not because I like or dislike. It just probably wouldn't be the first book I picked up. Really enjoyed By Way of Sorrow. I haven't read her newest book.
Survivor's Guilt is really great. Really great.
And one thing I love about my podcast is I get to know so many authors. And mm-hmm. and Robin and I buds, but we certainly keep in touch.
Good.
She was on one time, and she is coming back later in the year. I'm very excited to have her back again. But yeah, it's a shame that she's a big deal because she was able to get a big publisher.
Right.
That I wish that wasn't.
It's good that she got the big publisher. It's a shame that she's an anomaly, an exception to the rule.
Well, I want to talk about one, Flawless, with Seymour Hoffman and Robert De Niro.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know what your thought of with that movie was.
I'm trying to remember. I think I saw it. It's been a long time. I think I started to watch it and then I stopped just because it just kind of brought up a lot of trauma for me.
It was dark.
Yeah.
For those that haven't seen the movie, Robert De Niro is a tough cop who is, I think, shot or has a stroke or whatever and needs voice lessons to learn to speak.
Right. That's
and
right.
Seymour J. Hoffman is a trans individual who is trying to save money for transition surgery, and is a speech therapist and a neighbor. So you have this gruff, closed-minded cop and the trans neighbor having to work together. I thought it was beautifully done, but I haven't seen anything like it since then. And that was when was that? That was back a long time ago.
Right, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, and so are there any that I'm missing that?
Oh, yeah, I wasn't expecting this question. I mean, if there's a documentary, I think it's on HBO called Disclosure, and it explores the representation of trans people through over a century, basically, from the early days of film to modern day. And it has gotten better. Occasionally, I'll see a character on a screen and something will trigger my what I call my TDAR. It's like gaydar, but it's trans. Like, I wonder if that person is trans. It's just something about him. And I'm wrong half the time, by the way.
Yeah.
For the longest time, I suspected Ken Burns was trans, and he's not. I don't know, something about his voice or something. I'm wrong half the way. So you can't trust this, okay?
Yeah.
But every once in a while, I was like, oh, wait a minute, is that person trans? And turns out they are. And their role may or may not have anything to do with their character may or may not be trans, or it may not be disclosed whether they are or not. So in that aspect, I think it has gotten better. And at the same time, as we mentioned earlier, making those inroads has also resulted in a lot of pushback. Claims of, oh, indoctrination. What can I tell my kids? It's like, they're turning my kids trans. Like, no, we're not. If your kid comes out as trans, they were already trans. Believe me, I'm trans, and despite all of the straight media that I endured for 50 years, didn't make me cisgender.
Yes. Yes. You know, I haven't heard it brought up from anyone I know well in a long time, but, you know, when I've heard people mention trying to turn kids gay.
Gay,
and
yeah.
I said, okay, can you picture yourself sucking dick? No. So why do you think it's so easy to manipulate somebody that they like it? Oh my God.
Yeah.
What about cisgender authors and their representation of
I think it's gotten better.
Are they doing it well?
Some are, some are not.
Yeah.
I wasn't allowed to bring this up on Joanne's podcast, and this is not a slight against her, but J.K. Rowling has caused irreparable harm to our community, despite her protestations that she's not transgender, or not, she's not transphobic. She is.
Mm-hmm.
She's a TERF. And her stories where she's using the pen name Robert Galbraith have continued to reinforce the stereotypes that trans women are men that are looking to prey on cisgender women, which couldn't be further from the truth. Trans women, we are women. We see ourselves as women. And the last thing that we want to do is harm other women. And so in her case, she is causing a lot of harm. At the same time, I do read authors who do a better job. And really, I don't have a problem with cisgender authors writing trans characters, but when you do that, I strongly recommend you hiring what's called a sensitivity reader. And all that is someone with lived experience that can point out potentially troublesome areas in a story that you might want to reconsider in how you represent. Just as if you're writing about characters using guns, it's a good idea. If you're not really well-versed with weaponry, it's a good idea to get input from someone that's an expert on guns so you don't end up writing about the safety on a Glock or on a revolver. If the guns in question do not have safeties, at least not safeties on the side. A Glock has a trigger safety, which I won't even get into. Not really a safety in the conventional sense. But if you want to have an expert with experience, I'm currently writing a new book with a protagonist who is a tattoo artist, and I'm planning on getting some input from actual tattoo artists so that I don't end up looking stupid to people that are familiar with, because there's like a lot of health protocols and everything. And I was like, okay, you know, I don't want to end up making a faux pas and writing something stupid that's factually inaccurate. We don't want cisgender authors writing things that are harmful, that cause harm, or that are factually inaccurate. And it's not so much, don't do that, but here's another way that you could do that that's a little bit better representation, that's more authentic to the transgender experience. And so that's all we're asking, is do it respectfully, don't cause harm, because we're fighting for our lives here. We're fighting for basic human civil rights, the right for a trans kid not to get yanked from his loving family or her family or their family. We're fighting. I recently had to talk a trans person down from committing suicide because the trauma that we're experiencing now is at ungodly levels, and suicide rates among our community are horrific. They're like many times more than the general population. Murders of trans people are at an all-time high. The violence that we're experiencing is at an all-time high. And so we're fighting for our lives. And anything that you can do as a cisgender author not to cause further harm is much appreciated.
The Trevor Project is my favorite charity.
Yes.
And right now it's actually the only charity I give to. And it, for those not familiar with them, look them up. But I will tell you, when they are rated, they rate so high when it comes to feasibility, low cost in managing their organization.
Yes.
Across the board, they're above and beyond other charitable organizations, and they're doing a great job. Mm-hmm. And God knows we need them today.
Yes, absolutely.
But back to the research that you're talking about, I've left most, I'm not going to go into detail, but they drive me crazy. I've left most Facebook writer groups, especially that were queer related, because I would see people, that's how they did their research, like ask a question, right, and then people would respond. And that was, and they didn't always agree, but that's how, that was their research. Right. Now, in my first novel, my protagonist, actually my first and second, which because I only have the two, my protagonist has PTSD. Did I go to Facebook? Absolutely. I posted. If you or someone you know served in Iraq or Afghanistan, please let me know. I want to talk to them.
Right.
And I talked a lot to folks to make sure I got it right. And it wasn't even like, it was second nature to me. I couldn't imagine doing otherwise.
Right. Yeah. When I was writing the Shea Stevens series, I actually did a phone interview with the international president of an actual outlaw motorcycle club, one percenter motorcycle club, and I'm not going to name names. And there were a lot of things that I could not ask because of reasons, club secrets and such. So this person was very strict about following that, but I was able to at least learn a little bit more about authentic outlaw biker culture. And You got to, if you're writing outside your experience, you got to do your research. One, to not look like an idiot, and two, not to cause harm when you're dealing with people in a marginalized community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. I did fail to mention, and really should have brought this up earlier, Road Rash comes out in June, but
yes,
there's a link to it in the show notes, and you can pre-order it right now. And actually, if you click on the link, it'll open up a new window, and you can continue to listen to this wonderful conversation with Dharma and I, and still click that purchase button. So I think Dharma would like it if you did that.
Yes.
You also have another book on pre-order, and I don't know if you wanted to bring that up at all.
Yes.
Because that's exciting. I, if nothing else, I love your idea with the titles. But
yes.
So let's talk about that. It's coming out later. It's in the fall, I believe.
Yeah, it comes out in October, mm-hmm. pun intended. And for now, I'm kind of going with the Avery Byrne Tattoo Vigilante series. Avery Byrne, she's a transgender woman. She's a professional tattoo artist, very well respected in the industry. And she basically finds herself on the run following with a bag full of mobster money. And I just kind of,
that's like, I came uh-oh. Up with this, like,
it's like, uh-oh, you hear those scenarios, like, you find a bag full of money on the street, like a lot of money, like $2 million worth of money in a bag that's not yours. What do you do? And I'm like, And so I played with it. I was like, what would my character do? And so I just started imagining this character. Who is this character? She's really into the gothabilly scene. And if you're not familiar with gothabilly culture or gothabilly music, it kind of dates a little bit back to, I mean, it's kind of a combination of rockabilly and goth and B horror movie. It's just this wonderful mishmash of comedy and music and rock and just, and it's with a kind of a throwback to 50s styles. So polka dot dresses, kind of pinup, and then the bikers with the pompadour hairdos. So kind of think of Streets of Fire meets, I don't know what. It's just a lot of fun. And Streets of Fire meets Godzilla. I mean, but it's not a sci-fi series or anything like that. It's straight crime thriller, but it's a lot of fun. And Avery is a really interesting character. She's young. She's 22. And the name of the first book of the series is A Conspiracy of Ravens. And all of the books in the series that I have planned, they're all group names of birds in Arizona. So we've got A Conspiracy of Ravens, A Murder of Crows, which is one that a lot of people are familiar with, A Parliament of Owls. And I've got a whole list of them that I've come up with. You know, when you're bored and your brain doesn't want to work, you just like brainstorm, like, what are some cool titles? And I just kind of played around with it. And there's some really cool, A Cauldron of Hawks, I think, is one of them, which is a cauldron. It's just like, just these fun names, you know?
Yeah, I wonder who makes the decision. Okay, what do I call a group of giraffes?
I don't know. I know. I know, but whoever is, I want that job, you know? And it's amazing. I mean, you'd be surprised at what kind of birds are actually in Arizona, because we have pelicans in Arizona. We're totally in the desert, you know, but we actually have, I've seen them. I was surprised, like, wow, there are white pelicans here in the middle of the desert. It's like, what? I thought they were shorebirds. And so it's amazing. And so I'm looking forward to, like, how can I play off this idea? And so the first book comes out in October, but I'm going to be serializing this novel on Patreon. And so if for my Patreon patrons or subscribers or whatever you want to call it, they get to read this book in installments, just for $1 a month. For 4 months, for $4, you get to read the entire book in installments, plus a bonus scene that won't be available anywhere else. come down now. Sound like a used car salesman. But it'll be available in installments, weekly installments, prior to its official release. And people that are subscribe at higher levels, they'll get a signed paperback, or you can be named as a character in a future novel, or mentioned in the acknowledgments. So I've got this whole, it's an experiment. I've never done anything like this before, and it's really pushing my boundaries, of what I can do. But I'm really trying to build a tribe of people, circling around to the whole tribe, building your tribe. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to connect with people that for whom crime thrillers featuring trans protagonists is meaningful to them. And so that's what I'm looking to do. And I haven't mentioned this publicly before, so this is exclusive, but Road Rash is going to be the last book in the Shea Stevens series. I know. I've got a lot of my stepson, who I love dearly, he's a diehard Shea fan, and I haven't told him yet, and he's going to be very heartbroken to learn this. But yes, it's a difficult decision, but I really want to focus my work on writing trans characters. And Shay is a beautiful person, and there are trans characters in the series, but, and I'm not saying that this is the last we'll see of Shay. Shay has a tendency to pop up in other series. She popped up in a Jinx Blue novel, and so I may circle around, but right for now, I want to focus on trans characters and representing my community there. So, but I'm starting this new series. I'm really excited about it.
Well, I'm very honored to have the scoop. Unfortunately, I think you just gave a lot of people a near heart attack.
I know. I'm sorry. I love Shay. She's a tough as nails, vigilante biker chick with a heart of gold, and I love her. And I think this is not the last we'll see of her, but it will be the last official book in the series. So,
remind everybody once again, the next Shea Stevens book is Road Rash, comes out in June, but you can click that pre-order button right now and make Dharma a happy person.
Yes.
Thank you for coming back, Dharma.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks a lot.